हरि हरि बोल। नमः ओम विष्णु पादाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामिनि नादिने नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशधारिणे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मलमपि शचीपुत्रमत्रस्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितकृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयतः परकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातं सहगणरघुनतन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीशाखान्वितांश्च। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। नेक्स्ट नेम इन विष्णु सहस्र नाम नंबर 568 इज आदित्य। दिस इज अ वेल नोन नेम, इट्स अ कॉमन given name in India. Probably the most famous Aditya is Aditya Birla. It's not generally considered a name of Vishnu, it's considered a name of the sun. It means son of Aditi. So, the sun god is the son of Aditi and also is Vamana Dev Bhagavan. So this name particularly refers to the in relation to Vishnu. This is, after all, Vishnu Sahasranam. It particularly applies to Lord Vamana. That's the meaning which our Gaurīya commentator on Vishnu Sahasranam, Sri Baladev Vidyabhushan, he also gives that understanding. The 12 Aditya, they are known as 12, as listed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Their names are given, the 12 sons of Aditi. The first is Vivasvan, which he is the present sun god. So that refers, but also another Aditya is Aryama. Pitrinam Aryama Chasmi, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Among the Pitris, the forefathers, I am Aryama. Then Pusha, important god in the Vedas, Trashta, Savita, Bhaga, Dhata, Vidhata, Varuna, Mitra, these are well known. Shatru is a name, one of the Adityas. Seems to be an unusual name to call someone, oh, Shatru. So call them the enemy. And then the 12th is Urukrama, which means Vamana. one who has great steps. Little legs, but big steps. Now, the commentators have given, as usual, various meanings apart from the one which is the meaning the Vamana avatar. One meaning is Krishna. Now, how is Krishna the son of Aditi? Doesn't seem right, does it? He's the son of Devaki, Yashoda, but not Aditi. So how is he Aditya? Well, in a roundabout way you can say it so. That Devaki was Aditi in a previous life, so you can also say Krishna is the son of Aditi. Sometimes I heard in Ireland someone said that, oh, you were my son in your last life, and then some woman says, and then the boy becomes, oh really, and then treats like the mother, something like that. Now, another meaning altogether is given, that this refers to Sankarsha. The name Sankarsha has come up in this verse of Vishnu Sahasranama and Hala Yudha we just went through yesterday, names of Balaram. So it can mean Aditya, can mean Sankarsan, because the Bij mantra for Sankarsan, it says here, is the Shabda. Generally, the Bij mantras wouldn't be, it would be combined with Ma, and generally it won't be written. It won't be written anywhere. They're kept secret. But it may begin with them with So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Aksharana Makarosmi, but that's Among the Aksharas, the letters, I am but this is So because he Sankarsha, and there are different forms of the Lord and different demigods who are invoked by various Bij mantras, exactly how to describe. They are sounds, usually monosyllabic, that bring to life a mantra and invoke the presence of the deities. So there are different deities who are invoked by different mantras. So many are given. Krishna is invoked by the Kleem. So for is Sankarsha. Then another interpretation, those who know Sanskrit, those who know Sanskrit well and the rules of grammar and everything, they can draw out different meanings from different dhatus and breaking the word up in various ways. So, if this art is, that can mean, if here means Vishnu, and then art can mean from Vishnu, and itya, to be attained, so it means, then it can mean that which is to be attained from Vishnu, which generally people think moksha. See, everything can be attained from him. So in that way you could open up millions of meanings. and Bhagavan Narayana, so these are various meanings of the name Aditya. And the next name, 569, also has the term Aditya, or the name, but the name within it, but the name is Jyotiraditya, which can mean then the light of the sun. As Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhasmi Shashi Surya Yoho, I am the light of the sun and the moon. Actually, in the order is given, the moon and the sun. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 6, Text 17, the sunshine may expand all over the universe, but the source of the sunshine, namely the sun planet or the deity known as Surya Narayana, is the basis of such radiation. So, sunlight is in one sense non-different from the sun god, from the source of that. So if we say the light of the sun, that is non-different from the sun, and then the sun is ultimately Surya Narayana, the sun god, or the form of Narayana who resides within the sun, or the form of Narayana who gives inconceivable power to the sun. Srila Prabhupada pointed this out, but I never heard of any scientist or any scientific explanation. By science I mean modern science, who they can explain how the sun gives out tremendous heat and light. We used to hear that the amount of energy given out by the sun in 1 second is more than the human race could use in millions of years. If we talk about power stations, solar energy, nuclear energy, gas, coal, put it all together and have the human race, even in what is given out in 1 second by the sun. How much of the sun's energy reaches this earth? If you consider the earth is 93 million miles away approximately from the sun, and it's a tiny dot in comparison to the sun, and how many earths would be required to completely fill up? Say you at 93 million miles away from the sun, you filled up the whole area 93 million miles away from the sun to make one big ball. You filled up with globes, the sun, is the earth a globe? Anyway, we're talking here theoretically. How many earths would it take to make a ball with the sun in the center? Unlimited, practically. Huge, huge number. So the amount of energy that that reaches the earth from the sun is only a very, very, very small amount of the energy that it gives out. But I never heard any scientific explanation of how the sun gives out so much energy and doesn't deplete. How is so much energy being produced? You'd think that it would burn out like a burnout star or something like this. But it just remains. There's no sign of it burning out. So much energy. How is that being produced? And how is it, you'd think that the sun would become smaller and smaller and smaller and then cease to exist. Maybe someone can ask one of you can go on one of these internet forums and ask And you may say, well, we don't know yet, but we're working on it. We know. The Jyotir Aditya, the light of the sun, is Krishna, and Krishna is Avyaya. He says several times in Bhagavad Gita, Ajopi Sanavyaya Ma. I'm non-depletable. Any energy we use, we feel tired. Even young men, if they run, here are some young men like Narayana, very healthy. So if he had to run for 1 mile, he's not practiced to do that, I don't think, is it? Then he'd be energy runs down. Then you take a little rest, take a little prasadam, and you get your energy back. But Krishna, he doesn't become depleted in energy. Yesterday, the day before, I was reading about Krishna. When he came to the wrestling arena that had been arranged by his uncle, Kamsa, his uncle said, oh, my son, my brother's son is living over, no, sister's son is living over there. Let's invite him and we'll make a nice wrestling match to entertain him. Nice affectionate uncle called him. So there was one elephant put at the gate to kill Krishna by his loving uncle, Kamsa. Kuvalayapuda. He was very, not just an ordinary elephant, a really nasty, powerful elephant. And Krishna killed him. And it wasn't that he just went, poof, and killed him. But Krishna was running under his legs, going behind him, dragging him by the tail. And eventually he pulled a tusk out and beat him to death. So then Krishna went into the wrestling arena, already bloodied up. And then he fought with Chanura. It was a big fight. They were throwing each other around. Krishna would push Chanura to the ground, and Chanura would push Krishna down. And it was a big fight. It went on for some time. Then eventually Krishna killed him. Then came another one, Toshala. And Krishna killed him, and then all the rest ran away. All the rest of the wrestlers ran away. And then Krishna just jumped up on the dais and pulled Kamsa down and beat him, boom, boom, beat him up till he died. In the Harivamsa, which I've been reading, somewhat different account. He didn't beat him at all. He just pulled him down and dragged him. So he died a very inglorious death, to be dragged by his hair in front of all his citizens. And he just died like that, maybe died out of shame. But anyway, and then Krishna just met his parents and met everyone. There's no sign. He's exhausted. He has to have some glucose drink they give to athletes. No such thing. Completely fresh. In the Bible it said that God created the world in 6 days, and on the seventh day took rest. He's exhausted. That was a lot of hard work. But there's no such account of Krishna. He does it in his sleep. He's just sleeping, and then millions of universes in seed form come out of his body. So when Krishna gives energy to the sun, how is that possible? The answer is, we don't know. We know it's Krishna, but we don't know how he does it, and we don't need to know. We just need to know that he does it, that's all. And even that much, you may not need to know so many things in detail. So he is the fully energetic Shakti Shakti Matora Bheda. Srila Prabhupada often quoted this. This is from the Brahma Sutra Bhasha of Madhvacharya. He quotes a verse in which this point is made. The energy and the energetic are none different. So Krishna, he enters the sun. He enters all the planets. Gama, Vishnu, Bhuta. He enters all the planets. How do they stay in orbit? Gravity now. So the answer is Krishna. Oh, it's gravity. It's scientifically proven. It's gravity. You see, there's all this dark matter which no one could see, touch, taste, smell, feel, or hear. And it's there, and that proves there's gravity. Or rather, we have a theory there's gravity, but it doesn't work out according to our calculations. There should be a lot more matter in the universe. We can't find it. So if you can't find it, what do you do as a good scientist? You make it up and tell everyone it's scientific. Dark matter must be there, otherwise our theory doesn't fit. Well, there's another possibility. Maybe your theory's wrong. It's Krishna. It's not dark matter that you invented, and then you have to invent dark energy and so many other things. And then you string theory, all these 11 dimensions which no one can see, touch, taste, smell, feel, or you can't even imagine what they are. All kinds of bogus ideas. Why don't they just read Bhagavad Gita and save themselves millions and billions of dollars and useless research? Why don't they? Because Namang Dushkutino Murha Prapadyante Naradhamaha Maya Parita Jnana Asurang Bhavamashrita. They're all fools and rascals, and to put it briefly. So, another quote from Srila Prabhupada about this. This is from the summary of that comes at the beginning of Canto 5 of the Bhagavatam, chapter 22. The sun god who controls the affairs of the entire universe, especially in regard to heat, light, seasonal changes, and so on, is considered an expansion of Narayana. He represents the three Vedas, Rig, Yajur, and Sama, and therefore he is known as Trimai, the form of Lord Narayana. Sometimes the sun god is also called Surya Narayana. The sun god has expanded himself in 12 divisions, and thus he controls the 6 seasonal changes and causes winter, summer, rain, and so on. Yogis and karmis, following the Varnashram institution, who practice Hatha or Ashtanga Yoga, or who perform Agnihotra sacrifices, worship Surya Narayana for their own benefit. The demigod Surya is always in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, and can therefore be called Surya Narayana. And also the fact that he acts in such an extraordinary way, of giving out so much energy and not being depleted. This name then, Jyotir Aditya, this can also mean that the Aditya, the name that was just given, who is resplendent. So that's one of the qualities of the Supreme Lord. He's glowing, so bright. Glowing means Jyotirmay, you could say. Or how do you say in Hindi, Chikun? It's shining. In Bengali, huh? Chamak dete. I said both. Huh? Chamak nevala. In Bengali, it's like. Yeah. So I'm just trying to help him with his translation over there. But here he got stuck. Glowing. Jyotirmay, Ujjval, Prakashamay. You could say, but that's, people don't say. You could say it, but it's not commonly said. That, kya shabd hai? Nay, chamakne wale. Shining. So he's shining. And devotees, they also shine. Anyone who becomes detached from willingly and happily detached from sense gratification, they shine. Of course, some people are detached from sense gratification because they're locked up in prison or something like that, but they become depressed. Helping him with the translation. Yeah, I'm just trying to get it over in Hindi, then he can translate from Hindi to Telugu, but you gave the Telugu word. Okay. So he's resplendent, same thing, glowing, shining. He resides in the disk of the sun, that's already covered by this reading from Srila Prabhupada. And he glows like the sun. Or we could, I'll put it around the other way, the sun glows like him. From our perspective, we may think that he glows like the sun, but it's actually round the other way. But that is the Chandra Shakanyai. If we say the moon is between the branches of, you see, the moon is between the branches of the tree. It's not between the branches of the tree, but to our vision, it seems like that. So we are used to seeing the sun. We're not used to seeing Krishna. So we may say he glows like the sun, but actually the sun glows a little bit like it. Something we can compare. That Brahma Jyoti is glowing. That's described in Harivansha. I didn't come to that point yet, but that's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and that about the Brahman effulgence, that Krishna, going to see Mahavishnu with Arjuna, went through all the coverings of the universe, through the Karanodak, the ocean, or the causal ocean, and then he came to the Brahma Jyoti, and it was so bright and dazzling. Arjuna and the horses had a difficult time with it. They went through a very dark part also. Before you get to the coverings of the universe, you go past the Lokalok mountain, and it's all darkness. The sun doesn't shine there. Huge area. And then Krishna, he put his Sudarshan Chakra so the horses could see their way through. So, these are some different meanings. Let's have a look and see if there's anything more to say about this. Then he's so bright that he makes the sun seem dark by comparison. And that's described in Mahabharata. Then when Nara and Narayana, one time they are fighting with Shiva, and then Shiva was seen, all the different demigods and all the different planets, they appeared to be dark in relation to Krishna. There's so much brightness. Just like if you go from a very bright room and out into the darkness, and you just can't see anything. So when Krishna comes, he's so bright, you become dazzled, you can't see anything properly. This well-known verse from Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Vedahametam purushang mahantam adityavarnam tamasa parastat. I know that great person who is of the color of the sun and is beyond the darkness of this universe. So he's the color of the sun, Aditya Varnam. So the brightness of the sun, that gives the idea. So all the forms of the Lord, where we say Krishna is Shama color, bluish black. Rama is also described as Shama. It's sometimes said to be greenish also, but generally described as and depicted as Shama. Then we have Varaha avatar, who's sometimes red, sometimes white. So in this way, there are various forms of the Lord who are described as having various colors. We know Gauranga is bright golden like the sun. But any of the forms, if we try to see with these eyes, we'll only be dazzled. Because they're all dazzling, bright like the sun. Then Bhagavad Gita also, that this Aditya Varnam term comes. Savasya dhatara machintya rupam aditya varnam tamasah parastat. That's directly the same as Shvetashvatara Upanishad. One line is the same. In Shvetashvatara Upanishad, it stated that I know that person, and Bhagavad Gita Krishna says that this is the person to be known. Then, Sahishnu. This is name 570. And it is a name that has come before in Vishnu Sahasranam. For us sinners in this world, it's a very important name. Because if we consider who's qualified to go to Krishna, who is qualified? We're all making so many mistakes. But he's very patient and tolerant. That's the meaning that... Oh, wait a minute. Going back to Jyotiraditya, Baladev, the meaning he gives. He is as splendid as the sun. His splendor is brighter than thousands of demigods. And those who remember him become like demigods. So, I gave some idea of that in the discussion. So, Sahishnu, Baladev Vidya Bhushan gives the meaning. He's very tolerant. And he forgives the offenses of those who take shelter of him. So, although this name has come before, it's good to discuss it again. Gives us hope, because if we think, well, I'm so sinful, I have no hope. We shouldn't become dejected. Krishna will help us. He'll tolerate, if we're sincere to serve him, he'll tolerate our mistakes. But if we think, yes, I'm very qualified to serve Krishna, he won't like that. He doesn't have tolerance of pride. He may also tolerate to some extent, but he won't fully accept someone unless they give up this pride. But it's his nature to be a very tolerant and forgiving of his devotees. As he states, api chet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak sadhureva samantara. If someone has the intention to serve me, Krishna says, if that's their real intention, but they commit some very bad activity, still they should be considered a sadhu because of their intention, not to be misused. It shows the great quality of Krishna, but it shouldn't be misused to think I can now do any nonsense I like and still I should be considered a sadhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches, Ishvara Shabhav Bhaktaya Nalaya Parad Alpo Shiva Bahumane Atta Prajanto Prasad. That it is the very nature of the Supreme Lord that he doesn't see or doesn't accept the offenses of his devotees. But if they do a little service, he takes it to be very great, and reciprocally, he gives them mercy to the extent of giving himself to his devotees. So this is his extraordinary quality, which we can also try to imbibe at our level. Our level is much smaller than his level. But we shouldn't hold grudges against others. Sometimes I hear devotees say, it sounds very strange to me, oh, you should be careful of Vaishnava Aparad, referring to someone doing something that they don't like. In other words, they think, I'm a Vaishnava. and you're offending me, so you're making Vaishnava proud. But a Vaishnava doesn't think like that. The common example is given that the baby, the child, even within the womb, is kicking. The mother not only tolerates, but she feels great affection. And then after the baby comes out of the womb, the mother is holding the baby is again kicking, passing stool on the mother. Nowadays they have these diapers, but otherwise, and you may also, sometimes you see the little baby, they don't know what they're doing, they're slapping the mother in the face, they don't know what they're doing. The mother not only tolerates, but is unlimited tolerance, and then for the little baby, and also loves the baby. Her love doesn't diminish because the baby cries in the middle of the night, wakes her up. No such thing. Of course, as the child grows up, then the child should be trained to behave in a civilized manner, not like a baby. But the point is that out of a sense of mamata, this child belongs to me, is mine. Therefore, the mother feels great love toward her own child, more to than other children. Her own child that came from her body. Of course, that's Maya, but that's a more pleasing form of Maya than hatred of others or so many other aspects of Maya. So many offenses he tolerates. An example is given that Lord Shiva fought with Lord Vishnu. Especially we have in Bhagavatam, Lord Shiva supporting Banasura, who Krishna had come to fight with. And Krishna didn't hold any grudge against Lord Shiva for doing so. So many times Indra did so many funny things, and Krishna forgives him. Just thinking, he's just a baby. It's Indra. What do you expect? Indra. Indra again. Indra, then the king of all the gods, holder of the thunderbolt, rides on Airavata, Uchaisrava. And Krishna thinks, it's Indra making some fuss again. It's just like a little baby is crying or something. He forgives him. Doesn't take him very seriously. Another very famous example is that of Shishupal. 99 times Krishna just tolerated all sin, all bad things. But he didn't get fed up. If one way to deal with people who are causing you disturbances, you just ignore. If you go back at them, no, you're wrong, then they'll get more excited. You just patiently ignore them. They may run out of energy, but not with Shishupal. He started off his career in this world by blaspheming Krishna. The child, when they're born, the mother is always, what's the first word they're going to say? They're going to say mama or papa. What are they going to say? Shishupal's first words, Krishna, I hate him. So from the very beginning, and he didn't become less enthusiastic. As he grew up, he became more and more enthusiastic to blaspheme Krishna. And Krishna just tolerated. Shishupal, what do you expect? And one time it became a little too much. Well, actually, there's another reason also. Krishna might have tolerated even the 100th time that Shishupal blasphemed him. But Shishupal deliberately did so as to cause he was deliberately trying to provoke a fight in the Rajasuya Yajna which would have spoiled the yajna, because if any blood is spilled, then the whole arrangement becomes nullified. You can't have a yajna, not this kind of yajna anyway, with blood, human blood. Some yajnas, they chop the head of the horse or cow, but not in this yajna. So he was trying to provoke a fight, Shishupal. So Krishna, just to keep everything under control, Krishna zipped his head off with his Sudarshan Chakra. And he managed to do it in such a way that no blood was spilt. So that's Krishna for you. Described in Srimad Ramayanam about Lord Rama. In the very beginning of Ramayana, we find the question, who is that person who is now the abode of all qualities? And that person is Rama. One of his qualities given there is Shamaya Prithivi Samaha. His patience is like that of the earth. He puts up with abuses and does not retaliate. Another interesting observation from Radha Krishna Shastri, one of the commentators, is that because the son takes on the qualities of the mother, so Vishnu is very patient and tolerant because he was born from mothers like Aditi, Kaushalya, Devaki. They all have this, if you examine their character, they all have the quality of being kshamata. They have this quality of peacefulness and patience, tolerance, all these things. Then, quoting from, I believe this is the is Parashara Bhatta, his commentary. He states about the Supreme Lord that he forgives the accumulated sins that were committed in the past or to be committed in the future. Sins committed consciously or unconsciously by all the organs of sense at all times and in all ways. Sins committed by not observing the Shastric injunctions or by doing acts forbidden by the Shastras. So there are sins in English legal jargon. It's said there that there are signs of, crimes of commission and crimes of omission. Crime of commission is to do something wrong. You may think, well, what other kind of crime is there? Well, another kind of crime is to not do what you should have done. So the mother could be prosecuted for not feeding her baby. So I didn't do anything wrong. You didn't do anything wrong, that's true. But you didn't do the right thing that you should have done. So he forgives all these sins that are common and uncommon, sins committed by insulting and abusing him, as well as the sins against his devotees. You may say, well, now you're standing right in front of Gopinath Prabhu, so you can. So I may say, well, that's good. I can do any damn thing I like and Krishna will forgive me. He may do, but his devotees might not be so willing to forgive you. They might not let you into his association if you see that you have such a flippant and offensive attitude. So don't take him for granted. Similarly, Sri Ramanujacharya has listed various kinds of sins, and Ramanuja can have intercession for us. Intercession means he may act as an intermediary between us and God, Guru. So he refers to various wrong actions performed through thought, word and deed, thinking something wrong, saying something wrong, doing something wrong. Sins committed through an infinite number of births. Infinite sins accrued from performing acts that are forbidden and from not performing acts that should be done. The wrong activities directed toward him and his devotees. All varieties and shades of sin that we commit that appears that they shouldn't be tolerated and forgiven. But he forgives them. Those that have already begun to fructify and those that are still to take their effects, the sins that we've committed in the past, that we are committing now, and those we will commit in the future, he's ready to forgive them all. If he'll wipe out everything if we fully surrender to him without any conditions. The commentator here makes the note that this is the basic concept of prapatti. Then, some other similar meanings of the name. He who is endowed with enormous patience, he who forgives, he who suffers patiently for us with perfect detachment, then he who conquers his foes is one of the names given, or meanings given. He comes over to his gratefulness, also that he'll accept simple offerings of food given by the devotee. That it's not necessary, he doesn't say, hey, I'm God, you should give me nicer food. But the devotee offers whatever he can offer with love and devotion. Krishna accepts that. That's one of the meaning. He accepts the offerings of his devotee. And one of the parts I don't see an explanation of. And then another point, then his tolerance. He recommends in Bhagavad Gita that one should be tolerant of various situations in the world. Matra sparshas to kanteya, shita oshna sukha dukha daha. Someone should be tolerant of heat and cold, happiness and distress. And the great example of that, of course, is Lord Vishnu himself. And a great example of that is there in Ramayana, where Ram is called to the palace of Dasharath and told that tomorrow you will be crowned as the king. And he bowed down at the lotus feet of Dasharath and he accepted it. Not that he started going, Jai, at last. Just, okay, you want me to be the king tomorrow? All right, and didn't become elated. Then the next day he called and said, no, you're not going to be the king. You will be exiled to the forest for 14 years. Same thing. Straight face. Didn't become angry. Just completely fixed. You could say tolerant of material situations. So, this is another feature of this. He's aloof from material happiness and distress, heat and cold, and so on. He's not affected by that. He's so much influenced or affected by his own yogamaya potency. He's always in bliss, in spiritual bliss. And so there's no question of his material suffering. Anyway, from our perspective, that is perceived as his being very, very tolerant of various situations in the material world. For him, there's no actual difference between heat and cold within this material world, happiness or distress. He is aloof from all these things. To him, he just sees it as... He can understand that others are suffering like that, but he doesn't suffer. He never suffers from excessive heat or cold or any such thing. He's above all such sufferings or enjoyment. Okay, one more name for this verse is Gati Saptama. That's name number 570. Oh, let me get back to this. Then yeah, he's very, very loving and forgiving. So even if he says, you can offer me a leaf, flower, fruit and water, and he's serious. If someone offers that with love, he'll accept it. He doesn't say, yeah, where's all the Mahaprasad? Well, this is, where's the puris and halava? No, whatever someone can offer to him with love, he will accept that. He says, I will accept it. Ashtami Prayatamana. Even if someone just has some, there's nothing else to offer. In many countries in the West, in the winter, there's not much you can offer, especially in the way of fruit. Not much. You offer whatever you can. Krishna will be happy. That's his kindness. Then Gati Satama, there have been names like this previously. Satangati, he comes twice before this. Muktanam Paramagati, very similar name. Sadgati, who is the goal of persons who are sat, the ultimate goal of saintly people. So, what other names are there with it? Yeah, so there's several names with a similar meaning. Gati means the goal of our life, and Satama means those who are very good people, those who are above the ignorance of this material world. They make Krishna the goal of their lives. Other meanings can be the best instructor on the path of dharma. Who can be a better instructor than Krishna? Then the best among the refuges to be sought. We may take shelter. Deha patya kalatraya deshu atma sanyaishva satsvapi teshan pramata nidhanam. Generally in this material world we take shelter of the fallible soldiers, like children, money. We do see that these things can't actually help us, but we don't see. Pashyanapi na pashyati. We see but we don't see. It means we see but we don't understand. So he is the proper goal or the proper place to take shelter. There's no use to take shelter. Several examples are given. No use to take shelter if we think, I want to cross the ocean. So we have here a very nice stone boat. Very strong boat. The only problem with a stone boat is that it can't fulfill the function of a boat. It won't float, sink. So we have to have we want to take shelter of a boat to cross the ocean, then we should take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. And that will help us as the proper people who are sattama, who are, also means they're not stupid. They make Krishna the goal of their life. Otherwise, people who are stupid, they make all kinds of stupid goals the goal of their life. What they want to get out of life. One who's actually intelligent, he wants to go to Krishna. Also, the name has been given prior to this, muktanam paramagatihi, the highest goal of those who want to attain mukti, released from repeated birth and death. So various ways this name has been interpreted or understood. He is the best possible instructor on the matter of dharma. He gives us the Gita, the Vedas, the Puranas, the Mahabharatas. If you try to work it out all yourself, you'll find that there are so many different things said in all the Shastras, it becomes quite confusing. Therefore, we should take shelter of Krishna. Krishna is the one who, by taking shelter of, we can understand everything. Otherwise, very difficult. We can't to understand the Shastra. We can't understand by our own brain power. But if we take shelter of Krishna via the authorized representatives that he has given, then we can understand. Acharya van Purusho Veda. Someone who has an acharya, they can understand the Vedas. So Krishna, he understands. And he wants others to understand also. And for those who do understand the actual message of the Vedas, then he becomes Gati Sattama, the goal of the saintly persons. Then Shankara, he splits up the words Gatihi and Sattama, which means that Gati Sattama means that the highest goal or the ultimate goal of those who are going above the lower modes of material nature. But it can also mean that he is the path or the way, just like we have in the Bible, Krishna says, I am the way and the truth and the light. But actually, it's Krishna. It's Krishna, and he is the best. It can be understood to mean he's the best gati, the best goal of life. What is your goal of life? My goal of life is to... I don't know, people have so many material desires, but if you have to fill in the dots, my goal of life is dot, 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 dot. So you can say to serve Krishna. That is the best goal of life. Otherwise we can say, my goal of life, Mahatma Gandhi says, is to make India independent. Or, so we may say, well, my goal is to make India free from corruption. Or some may say, my goal of life is just to lead a peaceful life. Never mind such big ideas as to make India free from corruption. Let me just live peacefully and I won't do harm to others and hopefully they won't do harm for me. So everyone has a goal of life, whether it's ambitious or not very ambitious. But for those who are sattama, who are above the low way of thinking, by which we think that anything in this material world can be any use to us, they make their goal Vishnu. Nate vidu swata gazinghi Vishnu. They rise above the platform of those who don't know that the goal is Vishnu. He's the ultimate resort and support of all. Ultimately, everyone's looking for Krishna. Everyone wants Krishna ultimately, but they try to find in different ways. They may go to various demigods, they may go to some bogus guru, they may go to some bogus religion, they may... For them, their goal of life is to get more and more alcohol to drink, or more ganja to smoke. But people have various goals of life, but they're ultimately looking for Krishna. And when they come to Krishna, then they'll be satisfied. Otherwise, they won't be satisfied. In Bhagavad Gita also Krishna describes his house as Gatihi, the ultimate, the goal, Gatir Bhata Prabhu Sakshi.
So some other interpretations.
He's the right person to take shelter of due to his qualities, such as the ones that have been just mentioned in Vishva Sahasranam: forgiveness, patience. You try to take shelter of someone, but they just beat you. Then how will you do that? Someone who's... Yes, please come. But I'm not fit to come because I'm sinful. No, anyway, you come. We'll forgive those sins. Of course, we don't take advantage of that. Just like if we are to approach Krishna to worship in the temple, then we have to be clean, with clean clothes, with tilak. There are various terms and conditions. It's not just that anyone can just walk onto the altar and do whatever they like. So there are considerations of purity and eligibility for worshipping the deity. But Krishna's nature is to... Not that we say that, well, then you don't have to be clean, you can go, you can get up in the morning and just get up and put on some dirty clothes and go and worship the deity. We don't say that. But we do say that Krishna, he is very patient and forgiving and tolerant. If we make some mistake, that doesn't mean we should deliberately do it. So he is the goal. He is to be attained by the process of devotional service, which should be executed as well as possible. But if we don't properly do it due to some material conditioning or whatever, then Krishna, he's willing to, okay, try again, have another chance. He doesn't reject us. So then we should take shelter of such a person. We should make him our goal. If we see such a person who is so merciful that he'll deliver Putana, who wanted to kill him, to the position of a parent, or seen like that, then or a nurse in this case given, yeah. Then why should we think of taking shelter of anyone else? If we've understood, if our intelligence is clear, then we can understand Krishna is the right person to take shelter of. Then we, by thinking like that, we ourselves become sat. We become in the category of sattva. And Krishna is described here as gatir sattama, the goal for those who are sadhus. For those, so it's a round and round kind of thing. Those who are sadhus, they want to serve Krishna, and that qualifies them as sadhus. If we don't serve Krishna, then you're not a sadhu. And then he is the proper goal for those who are on the highest level of understanding. And if you decide, okay, I want to serve Krishna without any personal desire, then you come to the highest level of understanding. Baladev Vidyabhushan gives a similar meaning, that he gives the most valuable spiritual destination to those who take shelter of him. So by taking shelter of him, you can go to the spiritual world and live with him happily forever, because he is worth taking shelter of. Okay, any question about this? Gatir Bhata Prabhu Sakshi. Yeah, any question? Yeah. Nivasa Sharanam Surat. Yeah.
Vrindavan, next to the Radharaman Mandir, there is Dwadasha Aditya Tila.
Dwadasha Aditya Tila, that's the hill, not so close to Radharaman. That's the hill
where Sanatan Goswami installed the Madan Gopal deity, Madan Mohan, later known as Madan Mohan. So what's the story given there? That Krishna, he was being bathed and then he got wet and cold, and then 12 suns came to dry him. So that's a different... Aditya manifested himself, the sun manifested himself 12 times to warm Krishna up. So that's another Dwadasha Aditya. Dwadasha Aditya Tila. Hare Krishna. Another question? No, you're scratching your head. All right. Wondering what's all this about. Did you understand? Did we understand? We're supposed to understand. On the other hand, we can't understand. We just... Who is he? He's our goal of life. That's all. Exactly why, we can try and explain, but... He's inconceivable. Mother Yashoda, why are you looking at... There's no question why. He's my son. Why is the mother looking after the son? Why? You know, give a scientific reason. He's my son. So Krishna should be like that. Why are you worshiping Krishna? Give a big scientific reason. He's Krishna. He's Krishna. Why should we should love... We love him, that's normal. I mean, how can you even think of anything else? We should come to that stage. Hare Krishna. I need for tomorrow, the next, with this. So that's quite a big job to work that out. Hare Krishna.